Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode.
Today, I'm joined by Ari Louise of the historically inspired nursing brand Glean & Grace. So welcome to How Fitting, Ari.
Hi! This is exciting.
Yeah, welcome. So I want to jump right into things because I know from our previous conversations that your experience working with a factory has been a little different than you expected. And so I would love to know, like, what did you expect it to be like? And where did that kind of expectation, like, what formed that expectation?
Yeah, so one of like the things that was holding me up from actually doing anything big with my sewing and stuff was manufacturing, because I knew like as a mom and stuff, I did not have time to sew products myself. But I had listened to a few like podcasts just about like starting fashion brands and stuff. And a lot of them were talking about U.S. manufacturing and how some of the manufacturing only wants to work with like more established brands. And if you kind of don't know what you're doing, they don't really want to educate you. So I didn't really know what I was doing. So that was kind of intimidating. But Jackie with Motif, who was helping me with my fabric and stuff, she was working with a manufacturer in Bangladesh that does fair trade. And she was like, do you want to try working with these guys? Because she hadn't worked with them yet. They had reached out to her and they had connected. And she wanted to know if she should recommend these people to other people. And so it was kind of her guinea pig for that. And it's gone really well.
Yeah. That was my next question, is like, what has it actually been like working with the factory? Like, was it as intimidating or like difficult to find, you know, a place that would work with, a startup, smaller brand?
Yeah. So I had been looking myself for things and was having kind of a hard time just with Google search. And so that's why I was excited when she recommended these people. Tana Paris Swallows is what they're called. And they do all fair trade manufacturing in Bangladesh. And they have really low minimums and stuff. And are super easy to work with. So we do a lot of our communication. First, it was through email, and then we kind of moved over to WhatsApp, which makes the conversation very casual and like less intimidating. They've been really like understanding of answering all my questions. And if they're annoyed with me, they haven't made that clear. But like every time I have some changes that need made or whatever, understanding and have worked with me. So it's been a really good experience.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear it. And I think there are more and more factories that are realizing that, you know, the future of the fashion industry in some ways is like the smaller designers and, you know, these smaller brands that, you know, can't do 5,000, 10,000 of something, but like they're still worth working with.
Yeah.
And there's value in, you know, even those smaller orders, you know, for both sides. There's valuable relationship there.
Yeah, for sure. I would not have had the money to start with that with like thousands of units.
Most brands don't, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So backing up a little bit, like, what was the process that you, like, tell us a little bit more about Glean & Grace and like how did that business come to be in the first place?
So it started out as I was just making clothes for myself. I've always been really into historic costuming. And when I got pregnant the first time, I have two kids. When I got pregnant with my first one, I kind of put all of that on the back burner, thinking like, oh, I can't, you know, make clothes for myself now because I'm going to be switching sizes and stuff. And so It's not the time and supplies and everything to like make the things I wanted to make. So I kind of shoved that all to the back burner. And then the second time I got pregnant, I was like, I just don't really want to keep putting off the things that I love to do. So I started looking into like maternity wear and realized that pretty much all clothes actually were that because they just adjusted to fit the stage of life a woman was in because they didn't have a ton of clothes. And
Yeah, they didn't like go out and buy a whole new wardrobe for maternity.
And everyone had babies. So that's the other thing. And so then I started kind of making things based off of the research I was doing for historic women's wear. And started then, after making a few pieces, started mixing it with kind of the more modern stuff that I had been used to making. And eventually came up with the concept of a nursing bra dress that is the main product I sell right now.
Well, yeah. So what do you think, like, why do you think maternity and, nursing clothes have gotten away from kind of that functionality and adjustability that they used to have?
I think part of it was just when we industrialized clothing, people could afford a lot more clothing. And in the 1950s was kind of when the like body type or fashionable body type went from being like corseted and padded to kind of creating whatever the silhouette was fashionable to being the actual body that is underneath the clothes. And it's harder to do that kind of stuff and like make a fashionable look while you're pregnant. The fashionable clothes kind of started to be separated from what you would wear otherwise. In historic outdoor clothing, a lot of the outfits are actually kind of hard to tell that the woman is pregnant.
Yeah, because there's lots of fabric and lots of, hoop skirt or, whatever else going on.
Add out the other areas to kind of make it all semi look like something else.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that specifically of the silhouettes are just easier to in a lot of historic clothing to kind of hide a pregnancy or hide those changes versus now clothes are more tight fitting, and so there isn't that one garment can't necessarily work for kind of like all stages of motherhood, unless they're designed specifically for that.
We also kind of changed up our closures and stuff. So, like things like lacing and stuff helps a lot with adjustability. Where when you kind of start moving towards like using zippers and things, there's a lot less to move around and shift.
Very true. So you talk. I know you work with Jackie, and you mentioned she had introduced you to Swallows. How did you and Jackie meet and start working together?
So I met Jackie back in 19. I was working as a tailor. I didn't go to design school or anything like that. I just started working in a tailor shop, and the woman who owned it was basically mentoring me and teaching me how to pattern and do alterations and that kind of stuff. And she knew Jackie because of a family connection from when her dad was in college.
Wow, small world.
Yeah, I always thought that she had met Jackie like through networking when she was in college because she went for fashion design. And then later I found out that that wasn't the case.
That's cool, though.
Yeah. So I met Jackie in 2019 when we were working at the tailoring shop. My boss liked to do like these little local fashion shows, and she was really into sustainability. And so we did one show where we used Jackie's fabrics for like all the designs. And that's how I met Jackie. And then I also used her fabric when making my wedding dress in 2020.
Cool.
And then we kind of reconnected because she was needing some people to try out her new 100% recycled fabrics. And so I made some things for her to kind of show how to use it and stuff and get feedback on it.
Nice. Yeah, and for the listener who may not be familiar with Jackie's work, she works with artisans, fair trade, to make these gorgeous hand-woven fabrics. I just got to meet her in person in May at a trade show and see her fabrics like in person for the first time, and they are beautiful.
And actually the fabrics that I tested out for her ended up being the stuff that I use now for my products.
Kind of partnership on the fabric, and it sounds like that kind of came about and started even before Glean and Grace as a business was started. Is that right?
Yeah, she had this fabric that she wanted to get feedback on, and then she also was doing a course for like designing the fabric and wanted some people to test out the course before making it public. And it's public now, which is cool. So if you want to design handwoven fabrics, she's the person to go to. So I was also kind of in her test run of the course designing like the patterns that go into the fabric. And I just recently got my fabric from that course, actually, which is cool. My next collection is like I designed the fabrics and then they're being sewn into the dresses I designed, and it's really fun.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so cool. I can't wait to see how they turn out with the new fabrics. So yeah, you have experience like tailoring and obviously sewing your own clothes. But, how has it been different? Like, has your approach to design or to sewing, or to fabric changed at all since running your brand now?
Yes, it has a lot. I have never made the same thing like more than twice.
For yourself.
Yeah. And so this was the first time I've made this dress probably like 25 times at this point, refining the pattern. And it has been partially exhausting and partially very cool to see how it's changed and has become just a better product than it was. I have the dresses that I originally made for myself like 2 years ago. And I thought they were the coolest, most beautiful things back then. I look at them now and I'm just like, wow, that's not great.
Like, in what ways? Like, what are there like specific things you can share of like what were some of those changes you made or improvements that you realized over time making these that would make it, you know, even better?
Yeah, the original dress was actually like a nightgown, like a nursing bra nightgown that I made, and you can get those at the store. They're like made of knits and they're kind of short because they're nightgowns. And I wanted to make one out of natural fibers. So I got some cotton and I put it together. And it just is not the best fit. And is definitely, it's very comfy, but not super flattering. There's not enough gather in the skirt. And then later on, I added the little snap hems that have become kind of a staple of the design and stuff too. So it's just more like a tunic-y length white dress that's pretty poorly fitted in the bust. So I don't think it works super well as a bra, where the new design definitely actually holds everything up.
So like adding more support and changing the silhouette a little bit. And the fabric too, like did your initial one, was it in a knit or was it that cotton a woven?
It was in a woven fabric. It's just like a lightweight woven cotton, and it doesn't drape the way that Jackie's fabric drapes. And then also when I added the snap hem to it, that adds like a weight to it, makes and like adds structure around the hem, so it like drapes really heavy but then still has like this A-line kind of silhouette. And I really like the way that looks.
Yeah, I think that's something that I think about a lot that I think is kind of underrated in design, is like thinking about the actual weight, like the physical weight of the garment. Not just like, I want a heavier fabric weight because I want it to be thicker or more opaque, but the actual, like, how heavy is the garment and how does that like hang and drape on the body from the physical weight of it, or, you know, the construction, the different hem types, and structuring that and designing with the weight of the garment and fabric in mind. It's like opens up a whole new world of possibilities and like things that you can like tweak and design for specifically.
Yeah, and in designing the fabrics, I finally understood like what I knew how to sew. Like, I promise I knew how to sew, but like grain lines, I never fully understood why that mattered unless it had some type of stretch to it. And so when we were working with the warp and the weft of the fabrics, and like designing the fabrics from that standpoint, Jackie was like explaining it to me. I was like, oh, I get now why you would want to cut on the grain. It just hadn't occurred to me. I know you're supposed to like line up the lines with the grain, and I was not the best. I cut corners with that a lot when I would make clothes for myself.
Yeah. So it sounds like really the process of making multiples and kind of sitting with this design for a longer time really paid off in, you know, realizing where it can be improved and how, you know, as the more you wear it, like, this is how it feels, this is how it drapes, this is how the fabric behaves, and seeing those incremental changes in like the next sample, the next dress. I bet that was really cool to see the process either at the time or looking back once it was done.
Yeah, it's been really cool. And I honestly am also just really impressed with myself that I had the focus for such a long period of time to do that. Because usually I'm pretty scatterbrained and like one project, another project, you know, I have like 10 unfinished ones before I start a new one. And so there was like a lot of purpose behind it and intentionality. And there's just it aligns with my values a lot. And so there was a lot of, I'm trying to think of a word now, just like passion behind this one specific project.
I love that. And I want to dive into that and the values that shaped it more. But first, I want to ask, like, are there other ways that, you know, running this brand and, you know, sticking with this project has grown or changed you as a person?
I think one thing, and this kind of is like this whole like 3.5 year journey of being a mom too, is I used to have a lot of my identity in how I dressed. I had like a very specific aesthetic and curated wardrobe that was made up of like vintage and handmade pieces. So can't really be replaced. And it was very like 1950s kind of fit and flare type of dresses that definitely don't work if you like gain or lose a few inches in your waist.
Mm-hmm.
Like fitted, there's no give to the fabric, like old zippers that could break easy and stuff like that. So when I got pregnant, I kind of felt like I lost kind of a piece of my identity, like, and I felt like there was these expectations from the people around me to dress this way. Because it was always the thing people commented about me was like, oh, you have such cute outfits and you're so creative and whatever. And so I didn't really know, there was a lot of value I put in that. And kind of moving through that as a mom and kind of changing my wardrobe and getting into these projects and stuff, I feel like I put a lot more of my identity in my values and in like my convictions, and then that kind of overflows through how I dress more than it just being like an aesthetic and I present myself as being all cutesy and whatever to be liked and to, you know, whatever it is that high schoolers and young adults think of clothes, and like just learning to love my body not as just being like this small thin girl in high school who like isn't a woman. I'm a woman now and my body's different, and learning how to dress that and appreciate it differently. It's just, there's a lot. I feel like I've grown a lot as a person just through all of that. And this has been like a key piece in that too. But a lot of what I'm doing with my business kind of comes from all of that. That answered the question.
Yeah, no, it did. And thank you for like sharing that backstory and that kind of like what goes into what you do now, because I think so many people can relate to that. You know, I'm not a mom myself, but, you know, just learning like style shouldn't like box you in and like create those, you know, like it's self-expression, but it's also, it shouldn't be what like creates yourself. And it sounds like you've really grown in the fact that instead of letting like your style define you, you flipped it of like, okay, what are my values and how can I express that in my style and like outward aesthetic versus letting the outward aesthetic kind of dictate who you are and what you, you know, want and what other, you know, how others see you. And that's a really profound difference, you know, even regardless of whether the actual aesthetic changed or not, you know, that kind of flip of like why you're dressing this way and for who you're dressing this way, and kind of the reason behind it, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think I definitely feel a lot more confident in who I am and how I look now than I did back then, because a lot of that is like driven by insecurity and stuff. And now it's just not like that anymore.
That's great. So what are some of your values then when it comes to clothing and then specifically in running a, you know, a fashion business?
Yeah, I feel like values are, I have a lot of opinions on like the fashion industry and clothes and stuff.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I have always, probably since I was like late teens, very much valued sustainability and ethical working, like ethical labor and stuff in the garment industry. And I used to just thrift a lot and call it good. Especially because I had kind of that vintagey look, so thrifting kind of worked for that. But since then, it's kind of become, I've become more educated than just like, oh, you know, buying from Shein is bad. You know, like, became something like very plain and being like moving towards knowing, even with the brands that look sustainable, like being able to see the greenwashing and being able to identify what is actually benefiting people versus what is kind of just PR. And then just being able to change my shopping habits based on that and being able to create products that really embody all of that. Because I think one thing that matters a lot to me is not just like making clothes out of making clothes out of materials that are sustainable and making sure that people are getting paid fairly. Like, that's very important. But also making clothes that last a long time and function well in day-to-day wearing and don't need to be replaced all the time. One of the issues I see a lot with the fashion industry is that whether or not it's made sustainably or whatever, a lot of clothes are made to be worn until you gain weight or get pregnant or lose weight or whatever. It's like they're kind of made to be replaced because they only serve one function for one season of your life. And I want to make clothes that work for a lot of things and that can function well for an evening out or for doing chores at home. Because we make a lot of clothes that are just kind of single use, but kind of the more formal events, and then the clothes that kind of work functionally, unless they're knits, like don't really give a lot of room to for our bodies to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important, even in just like for women's confidence and stuff, being able to not feel so judged by your closet of clothes that you don't want to get rid of, but definitely can't wear for one reason or another. So I think that there's a lot of layers to clothing to be about when designing clothing. So the kind of the tip of the iceberg is the sustainability, and then it gets bigger as you go down, that it's about empowering women who are making the clothes and empowering women who are actually wearing the clothes.
Yeah, so like there's so much in that, like you said, and so when you're thinking about, okay, how do I kind of live that out in your own wardrobe and in your business, what are some ways where you kind of break that big picture down into, you know, more actionable, may not be quite the right word, but into things that like in your daily practice and your daily running of this brand that you can live those out?
Yeah, I think one thing that I guess as like a personal consumer and then also while designing clothes, I kind of made myself a checklist of the thing of like the requirements that a garment has to have for me to feel good about designing it and selling it or buying it. And so some of those
things, are those two, is it two checklists or is it one checklist that apply to both of those areas? I'm curious.
It is one because I made the checklist as a consumer. And then when I was making clothes for myself, I was like, my clothes have to fit the checklist. So it's the same. And it might look different for different people too. Like, this is personal to me. But one thing is that it has to be like mostly made of natural fibers. My dresses have 30% polyester in them, but that's about as much as I like having synthetic fibers in my clothes. And that's kind of more of a personal thing. But I do think that increases like wearability for changing seasons and stuff with it being a little more breathable. And then it has to be adjustable to be able to wear it throughout my whole like my whole monthly cycle. My body changes throughout the 28-day cycle. If I were to get pregnant again, like, could I wear this still? Is there ways that I could nurse in this? And that's me as a mom, and not everyone's a mom. But I think about that when I'm designing clothes. And then, like, how many places can I wear this and how many activities can I do in it? Because I don't like having pieces that can only be worn for, like, one or two types of occasions. I'm trying to think of the other things. I don't have this written down anywhere. This has just been like in my head. But I like made myself a checklist and, oh, it has to match like a color scheme that I have in my wardrobe. And with designing, that is a little more flexible because I am not just making clothes for myself. But like a color scheme so I can very easily mix and match the pieces. I want this stuff that I buy to like match at least 10 other pieces in my wardrobe. So there's like just questions I ask myself before I buy something. And very rarely do I like something enough to like bypass those things on my checklist.
Yeah, those are all great criteria. And like to sit down and think about those beforehand, I'm sure really helps the decision making in the moment of, okay, I'm trying to design this new piece or like picking out a new piece for yourself. And to have kind of those kind of guide rails for the decision where it like takes some of the pressure off the you know, immediate moment of what do? Do I, you know, do this? Do I design it this way? Having those guide rails, I find some boundaries like that are really helpful when it comes to making these decisions.
Yes, boundaries have been actually like limitations, I think, increase creativity.
Me too.
And so even with my wardrobe, like purposefully keeping it smaller to force myself to style things differently to get the most out of my clothes, I think is helpful. Because I used to think a lot of creativity kind of came from this like boundless, where you can do whatever you want, almost kind of chaos. Like it's a little chaotic, honestly, trying to just create from like anything. And so I used to have like a huge wardrobe and I was always like, it's because I'm just like a fashion girly, you know, I'm just really creative with my clothes. But the reality is like I wore the same outfits all the time. It was not actually like I wasn't actually pairing things together in new ways. And I didn't have to do laundry very much because I had so much clothes. Now,
unless it was the, oh, I want my favorite outfit again. Now I got to do laundry just so I can wear that same thing again.
Exactly. Like you kind of realize, like, I just kind of wear the same stuff, even though I have so much clothing. So I have been a lot more creative with how I style things. And I hope that's reflected on my, like on my Instagram. I do little styling videos and I'm always like, figure out, okay, what's a new outfit I can do? I don't want to look repetitive on here.
Yeah, I'm always impressed by that. Like post, it seems like for a while you were posting every day. Is that right? Yeah, or at least it was popping up. Even though it's like you have one dress at the moment, but you know, different colors and the different hem styles and lengths, so combinations. But the way you styled it for even summer and then now going into fall and just a whole bunch of different options with that same, essentially the same piece.
Yeah.
How many,
like, kind of meant to be the foundation of your wardrobe a little bit. It's an undergarment, but it's also not. I sometimes in the summer will throw it on with just like nothing else because it's my bra and it's a full length dress. And so I can just wear it. And then I just layer and layer throughout the winter.
Yeah, talk about multi-season and multifunctional fashion. It kind of bridges all of that.
Yeah, that's the goal.
So, okay, so in designing this, like, can you walk us through a little bit of, like, what did the timeline look like for, you know, designing this dress, bringing it to, you know, launching it to the world, and what were kind of the steps that you took along the way to get here?
It has been this entire year. I launched in August, and I started in January. In January, I started that fabric designing course with Jackie, and with no intentions of starting a business, by the way.
Oh, wow.
I had had this dress design, and I made it out of her fabric, and I was like, this is the fabric for this dress. But I was just making it for some friends who were pregnant. I wasn't planning on making, like, mass producing it. And we went through this design course. I designed fabric, and I was like, ooh, I just really want to see this fabric in person as a dress. But you have to buy, like, 150 yards is the minimum. And so I knew that that was too much for a hobby sewist. And I was kind of going back and forth, like, well, maybe I could just sell a few or whatever, just so I have an excuse to buy this fabric. But I knew that I couldn't make stock on my own. And I was very intimidated by grading the patterns and everything. And so I kind of kept giving myself, like, excuses not to do it. And in the end, the biggest excuse was the manufacturing situation that Jackie very quickly cleared up for me.
Yeah.
And so we were like, well,
were you... Were you relieved of, like, oh, I figured it out, now I can get this fabric? Or were you almost like, now I don't have any excuses, I guess I have to do this, but it's still scary?
Both. Because ever since, like, 2019, 2018, I was like, knew that if I was going to do a career, I was going to start my own clothing brand. But it just was so, like, daunting, and it felt like kind of impossible because I don't understand all of that kind of stuff. And this seemed to be, like, an opportunity to actually do the thing. And I also just so happened to have a design that I was very passionate about and thought could help a lot of people. And so I talked to my husband, who's extremely supportive, and he was like, you should do it. It was very scary. I started marketing for it in April.
So before you had designed the fabric, but you didn't have the fabric yet. You had made one of these dresses for yourself, but you hadn't, like, started anything else on the brand, and you started marketing. Is that the timeline right? Cool. Well, I think that's smart, because a lot of brands wait until they have the product to start marketing, and it's, like, almost too late at that point.
Yeah, I knew I wanted to be able to sell at least a few when I launched, and so I had to have people to sell it to. So I kind of started my Instagram in April and was posting almost every day for SNL. And I think it's paid off because I'm really close to 3,000 followers.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And I had one video take off in May that had over a million views. And that was kind of the first moment where I was like, oh, wait. People, like, think this is smart. They're, like, interested in this. Maybe this wasn't a bad idea after all. Because I knew that, like, it was a good product. But, you know, you can't know if other people think it is. But when that video took off, and it went, like, a little viral. And I was getting lots of comments and questions and stuff. But I had no product at the time. So I kind of was like, just wait, you know? Get on my email list, which I also didn't have set up yet. Like, I was not expecting that to happen so soon. So I didn't have, like, a website or anything. I was just like, I don't know. So while that was all happening, I was still grading the patterns. Like, I hadn't even gotten the patterns to my manufacturers yet. And I was just posting little styling videos of the dress and, you know, working on my patterns. I finally got those done in May and sent them out to Bangladesh because I don't know how to digitalize them, so I did it all by hand.
Yeah, take some work.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, and I made a tech pack and sent some videos along with it because I knew it was not like enough instructions. Like, it's kind of like a little bit of a mess. I'm sure you like make actual tech packs.
I mean, you know, it's a show and tell situation. So it's like all the document, all the details, and then pictures and videos, you know,
I are helpful too.
Yeah, like the samples help
their addresses and sent them. Because it's very hard to explain. I don't know. I was like, and then you have the snap tape, and then you have these nursing clips, and the guys there didn't know what a nursing clip was. So I had to explain, like, send that to and be like, I need this, but I need it in this color. Sourcing that was a whole thing. But they've been very patient with me, and I'm very grateful because I definitely did not make it easy for them to make these dresses.
Well, I mean, it sounds like sending a sample, sending your pattern, sending your tech pack, even if it's not like the best tech pack in the world, like those are all the right things to be doing. So you gave them enough information with those different, the actual sample, the, you know, written tech pack, the video, that they obviously were able to figure it out.
They were able to figure it out, and I'm impressed with them. So
yeah, so how long then did it take to, so you sent those everything in May, and then what kind of happened from there? How long did it take for them to be able to figure it out and like make you a sample? Yeah, what happened next?
They took about 8 weeks to make a sample, to make all the samples, because I had requested each size.
Okay.
Because I was going to send out my samples to some product testers. So I requested one in each size to make sure that the sizes were working the way they were supposed to, because I graded it all myself. It took about 8 weeks, and it took about a month for them to get here from Bangladesh. No, not a month. It took about a month for my stuff to get to them. It took like a week for their stuff to get to me, which was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took like a month to get the patterns to them with shipping. And then the dresses they sent back took about a week in the mail. And then they weren't right in all the ways, so I had to alter them before sending them out to product testers. But I made some notes. I made like a whole document with pictures and everything of what needed change. Some more videos about one thing that we were kind of running into issues with, which is good that I've been wearing the dress so long. Like, I've been wearing my own product so much that I notice the things that need fixing. The handwoven fabrics tend to kind of, the threads kind of split a little bit at the seams where there's a lot of tension.
So, looser weave.
Yeah, it's like a looser weave. So there was figuring out like what weight of interfacing to go on certain seams and stuff to fix that issue. And I wouldn't have known that had I not been wearing the dress so much. I would, because when you look at it freshly sewn, it obviously doesn't have any of those problems. Yeah, so it's been a long process. We did photos at the end of July and then launched mid-August, which was good. It was very exciting. Sorry, my computer's dinging.
It's all good.
Yeah, sorry. It was very exciting and a lot of work. And getting the website. I had someone from Upwork help me with my website and stuff. So there's so many pieces that, like, I knew it was going to be a lot when I started, but it was way more than anticipated.
Yeah. So you said, like, okay, the launch was good, but I sense a little, like, hesitation there. What were kind of your goals for the launch? And, you know, is that what happened? Or, like, what? How did it actually go? Like, how did you feel about it kind of in the moment? Like, what made it like good, but with the hesitation there?
So with this launch, I actually decided to do like a small, like 24 dresses, so like small batch that I was sewing myself because manufacturing was not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping it would be by August. And I really am realizing I have to have like an entire year between the designing and getting everything to them and stuff and like selling the actual product. And people told me it took a year, and I was like, yeah, but like I can faster, like it'll work. And there was just delays, like there always is, which I don't know why I was surprised by.
There's always something, like, I feel like something always comes up where, like, when I was managing my old job, like managing the production timeline, I always just put an extra month in there just because, and that was like with US, so we didn't have as much, like customs or like shipping delay issues for the most part. But there was like always stuff that I just planned on. A month or 6 weeks, sometimes 2 months are just going to be eaten up by some unexpected thing.
Yeah, so that is true. And something that I had to learn, even though people told me this, like, I don't know, Emily, who does the skirts at Mrs. Emily, she told me all of the flukes that she has to deal with. And I was like, yeah, but this will be fine. So everything wasn't ready for August to actually launch in August, but I had built this like small audience of people who were pregnant or nursing and like really wanting a dress.
Yeah, you have a very like timely product.
It's yeah. So I really wanted to get them dresses, but didn't have manufacturing ready. So I decided that I would just do like a few that I would sew myself. And we did the photo shoot. I have all these gorgeous photos and have them on my website. And we do the launch with all the emails and SMS texts and all the things. It was a whole thing. And because I work with Jane, and Jane is incredible. And
Jane Hamill.
yeah, Jane Hamill, I had you all. It was very exciting. The goal was to sell all 24 dresses. I had like 84 people on my SMS list at the time, and like over 300 on my email list. So I was like, maybe I could, I don't know. And we sold four the day of, and then have sold another three since. And that was a little disappointing, but work-wise, it takes a long time to sew these dresses. And actually, I'm so glad I haven't sold more.
Yeah, like if you had gotten 25 orders the first day, like
Yeah, I would have been
it took
like,
you like a
fine.
month to sew at least.
Yeah, so it has been good. Like the slow has been good. But still, like, oh, I wanted to sell more. But it's been good. It has been just the right amount of work for me. I don't actually think I could do more work right now because I'm still planning everything and then also trying to work on designs for future collections and stuff. Because everything's a whole year out.
Yeah, so it's like
Not future focused. I'm going to run into the same issue I just had this past year with not having enough time to do. So managing the like present important stuff and the future stuff and keeping up with the marketing and the socials and all the things that actually sell the product is a lot for my head to wrap around.
It is for sure. It definitely is. And like, are you're not spending like full-time hours on the brand, right? Or are you at this point?
No, I'm a stay-at-home mom of my two kids, and then my husband works 8 hours also from home. So he'll work his 8 hours, and then starting at 1 p.m., I work like typically 3, sometimes 4 hours a day. And then on weekends, I get more time, but it's not 40 hours a week. We're working on getting a sitter for 1 or 2 days a week, though, so I can kind of have some more focus time.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to manage like a business in 40 hours, but even more so when you're managing kind of all of those aspects by yourself in, half day increments at a time. So it's amazing like everything you've accomplished in that.
Yeah.
It's been a lot.
Like looking back, I'm just like, I don't even know how I did it.
I mean, but you've done it. You've done it though. So congratulations on that. I hope you're proud.
I am very proud. At one point, we were waking up at like 4 a.m. so I could work before the kids get up.
And oh, wow.
Also in the afternoons. It's just been crazy scheduling and stuff. Very exciting, though, for the next collection because I have Swallows doing all of those dresses. So I won't be sewing.
That will help a lot.
Any more dresses starting in February. I'm definitely ready to, like, hand that one over.
Yeah, that's exciting. So is there anything like else, like based on how this launch went and how this kind of first year and getting this first collection, anything that you're already planning to do differently for the next collection, other than you mentioned having Swallows do production and planning it farther in advance? But is there anything else where you're like, okay, now I have a better handle on what this takes and I'm going to try to, you know, try things a little different next time?
I could do more for the launch of a new collection than I did this past time. And just have that like more planned out and have all my emails and everything like scheduled in advance. So I was definitely like scrambling kind of to get everything together. Like I had just gotten my photos like a few days before and we had just gotten the website like actually up and running properly and stuff. And so everything was very like rushed. And so in the future, I would probably spend like a month prepping content and emails and everything so that that can kind of be more automated than what I did.
Yeah, take some of that like stress off of the actual launch date itself.
Yeah. I don't know. I have a lot of ideas for like future products that I'm really excited about, but I'm not sure when that kind of stuff is all going to get finished. I have a lot more fabric for like next summer. Mm-hmm. So I need to figure out what to do with it because it's like more fabric than I can do just in dresses probably. But I need to be working on those patterns.
And in all the extra time.
I know, and all the extra time I have, obviously. But yeah, I think so far, everything has been going as good as it can with time I have and stuff. I'm putting a lot of effort into it and like trying to do everything Jane Hamill suggests and like check things off the list because I do want this to be successful and I don't want it to not be because I didn't do something or didn't put as much effort as I could in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit of a perfectionist in that way. But so far, I think it's worked.
Yeah, I tend to be a perfectionist as well. But I had a really interesting conversation with my husband about it, actually, this past weekend. And he was talking about we're doing some renovations at our house, so like old house renovation projects. And for him, he's like, it's a little bit frustrating because no matter how good of work you do, it's always going to be a little bit wonky because like the house itself is wonky and you can't fix that. I try to remind myself, like, as long as it's, like, within tolerance, then it's good. And I was like, that's a great analogy, actually, for fashion, because we have tolerances on our specs where we know it's not going to be, you know, down to the 100th of an inch perfect on every measurement every time, but we have a tolerance. And so, like, it doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to be in tolerance to, like, fulfill the goal for, you know, whatever it is. And I was like, that was, like, a, you know, a profound moment for me when I realized that analogy.
Yeah. And every time I'm like, I'm like also just afraid of it like not going well. There's people in my life who are like, well, you don't understand like import taxes and how to do manufacturing, all this stuff. And so how do you know that you're not going to like, you know, mess it all up or whatever? And it's kind of stressful. I'm like, oh, I feel like I need to like prove some people wrong. I feel like I need to like show that all this work wasn't for nothing because I'm doing a lot also as like a mom and stuff. And my husband likes to remind me that even if you fail, like you technically didn't fail because you actually did the thing where most people wouldn't do the thing at all in fear of failing.
Mm-hmm.
So he says a real failure is always better than a fake failure in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, don't preemptively fail and be like, well, that wouldn't work, and just not even bother.
Yeah, so he's always reminding me that, like, but you're doing the thing that you've wanted to do for years, and so you're actually winning just by, like, trying. And then Jane always says that you only fail if you give up.
Yeah.
So between those two, I'm like, okay, I feel like maybe I'm catastrophizing a little bit.
Yeah, it's easy to do, but it's nice to have like the, you know, people, community or coaches around you to like remind you like what you have accomplished and kind of put things into more of a perspective and kind of keep us from, you know, catastrophizing something.
It's so easy to do. You put so much like love and effort and passion into it, and you're like, I just don't know. I don't want to be hurt.
Yeah, for sure. It's risky and vulnerable, I feel like, to run a business.
Yeah, and I've been
It's
doing
rewarding
social
too.
media, and everyone wants to follow my Instagram page. I'm like, don't look at me. That's been hard too, just like putting myself out there on social media to like find customers. Has been harder than any of the other things behind the scenes, I feel like.
Really?
Yeah. Everyone says I look really natural on video, but
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
yeah,
It's like
thanks.
I wouldn't have guessed that from like looking at your social media, but I mean, I totally understand the sentiment. I feel like it is scary, so I relate to it, but I wouldn't have guessed that just, you know, observing from the outside of things.
Yeah, I do not like watching myself. And I did theater in high school, but like then I didn't do theater for like 6 years, and all of a sudden I like don't want to be in front of people ever again. I don't really know what happened there, but I just really there's something like so vulnerable about putting yourself out there like you're somebody who knows something. That like imposter syndrome kind of creeps in, and the people in my life who just know me as a normal person want to follow me, and then I just feel like I'm not, like, I don't actually know anything.
But you do, though. I mean, like everything you've accomplished and learned, and like, yeah, there's always more to learn, but like, you know enough to get started and to do the thing. Like, you are doing it.
I am doing it. I just have to keep doing it. Every time I'm just like, just post again, and then just don't look at the phone. Post again and don't look at the phone. But like all of my traffic comes from Instagram right now because I don't really have a ton of like SEO or ads or anything on Google. So like without doing that, I really wouldn't have been able to sell anything. So it is good. It's just been hard.
Yeah, for sure. So, what is your like long-term goal for Clean and Grace? Like, what does success look like for you in this business?
I have talked to my husband about this, and we would like to eventually be able to make as much as his current income so that he wouldn't have to work full time, and could kind of help out with the kids more, and the business could become more of a priority for just like the whole family. Because I do think that what we're doing with Swallows and Motif is really important. And I think offering these types of options for women in the clothing industry is really important. And also because I love it and it brings me a lot of joy to make and design clothing and to get to share that with people. That would be the goal, to eventually have this be like the full-time thing that our family kind of does for income. But we are very far from that currently. But yeah, I have a lot of ideas for future pieces. And initially, I had had a thought to have like whole collections that were like basically mini capsule wardrobes that have pieces that mix and match together and stuff. And that's pretty far off at the moment, just because product production is a lot of work. So every time I add a new garment, like it's a lot of work to get that fitted and properly made and everything. But in the future, I would like to have a lot of different types of pieces and be able to style them all together and stuff. And I think that that would be helpful to kind of with the way I view clothes, to not have to like scour through all these different stores to find pieces that work together and like fit all these criterias kind of I have in my brain, make it a store that has all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool. And I love that, like, this is kind of like a family goal and, a family project for you long term. And I look forward to seeing you, that come to life for your family.
The goal. That's exciting.
Yeah, it is. So I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
I think one value through the clothes that I design, I think it's just that, like, women's bodies, just the way they are perfect, and our clothes should change for us, not us having to feel the need to change to fit into clothing or to fit into certain, like, beauty or fashion standards that we have that are always changing, but that our clothes could kind of take care of us. That's kind of the goal with everything, is I call it clothes that are kind to the body, because they don't judge you.
Yeah, I love how you put that. Well, this has been so fun, Ari, to catch up with you again and hear more of your story. Thank you for sharing everything. Where can people find out more about you and check out what you're doing with Glean and Grace?
You can find me on Instagram at Glean and Grace. And also I have a Facebook page. That's just kind of stuff from Instagram, though, that gets posted there. And then my website is gleanandgrace.com. And that's all I have, actually, at this point.
That's enough.
Yeah, that's enough.
Awesome. Well, I'll put links to those in the show notes. And thank you so much for joining me today. This has been lovely.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter. Or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.